Welcome, Dumbheads, to this week's Megasode of MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. Monday through Saturday, I drop one episode per day, identifying the dumbest thing on every single goddamn page of Heroes Unlimited, the gloriously ramshackle superhero RPG from Palladium Books. On Sundays, I combine all the week's previous episodes in one Megasode, like this one. If you'd like to play along at home, we're reading Heroes Unlimited Revised 2nd Edition, 2nd printing, from December 1998. Today we're discussing page 288 of Heroes Unlimited. We're still in the major super abilities section, and today we are barely discussing slow motion control. This is a power that's been going on since last page. It's got a lot of detail, it's a very interesting and abstract power, and let me just say that you guys have really dodged a bullet, forgive the little slow motion control joke there, in that this is not a serious analytical podcast, whatever pretensions I may occasionally show from time to time. I occasionally have something cogent to say, but by and large, I'm doing little kind of drive-bys on goofy things in this book without a tremendous amount of context, without a tremendous amount of, like, here's the important thing to pull from a close reading of this page. Here's, like, you know, deep game design nuggets. I'm sure there's someone who is really well-equipped to do that and someone who would be very interested in doing that. Maybe there is no one who is both. I don't know. I think if you were that smart, you'd have better things to do. But yeah, this is not a podcast where I'm going to go on and on about, you know, the strange view of time taken by this power. That's why I skipped it yesterday in favor of the second part of Shrinking, where we talked about, you know, Oxford Comma and all of his frankly unfair advantages over other shrinking characters. So we're only catching the tail end of it today, and that tail end just has a couple of little details that are easier to grab onto than some of the abstract stuff on the previous page. Slow motion control does a ton of things. It allows you to, like, slow people and objects down in terms of their relative time, so it makes them slower relative to you. This gives them a sensation of sluggishness, which is weird. It seems like it would make the world seem to be moving really fast to them, but no. It also allows you to do something called split-second slowing. That's what allows you to, as mentioned, dodge bullets, which is weird because it doesn't involve slowing a bullet down. It's almost like it involves slowing down time itself while keeping yourself moving at normal speed. That seems an awful lot like speeding up, which is not what this power does. And your metabolism is slow too, which seems like it's a different kind of slow than what the rest of this power envisions. But anyway, I'm coming dangerously close to doing that podcast you're lucky I don't do. Let's talk about, on this page, the dumbest thing, subpower 5, slow aging process. Clearly, we're meant to understand that you're always at a low level, just moving through life more slowly than other people. Quote, "This innate and ongoing process slows the ravages of time on the super being's face and body. The character will look and feel younger than he really is and doubles the average life expectancy to about 150 years. At 50, he or she will look to be 25. At 100, he or she looks 50. This kind of makes sense, sort of. Like, if you assume that you're in this weird sort of bubble where everything is moving like a little more slowly, but you have the super ability to still think at normal speed and move your body at normal speed relative to that, then sure, I guess like fewer relative years are passing for you, therefore you're aging more slowly. And this is not like an elective thing. The duration is constant, it's always in effect. And, quote, bonus, a one-time bonus of +6 to the physical beauty attribute. Take note of attribute bonuses for the ability to impress and charm. This is what really makes this power the dumbest thing on the page. In a superpower that is otherwise extremely high utility, right? You can use it to slow people down, you can use it defensively to dodge fast-moving attacks, etc., etc. This is kind of a grace note that is like, oh, and by the way, you're super hot because you age slowly, so you're like a semi-vampire. You look really young. A +6 to physical beauty is nothing to sneeze at. That's enough to take a normal person up to exceptional enough physical beauty to start getting bonuses to charm or impress other people. So to put that in concrete terms, that is like a big jump from podcaster level attractiveness to, like, you could be a model level attractiveness. +6 bonus, it's huge. And here's what's weird about it. The thing about this power is it doubles your life expectancy. Now that's strange when you consider that superpowers typically develop in or just after adolescence. So we got 10 some odd years of life before the life extending powers kick in. So it's weird that it would be exactly double. But maybe that's just shorthand, right? Except we got a pretty clear example here. Quote, at 50, he or she will look to be 25. And then at 100, you look 50. The next 50 years, same rate of effective slowing. I think it's fair to say that as soon as you get these powers, your apparent age advances at half the usual rate at most to achieve these numbers. That's assuming that it isn't sort of like latent within you and you're, you know, always aging half as quickly as everyone else. I want you to think about typical superhero age. In fact, no need to think about it. Let's read from the text. Page 25 of Heroes Unlimited, quote, "I think it is best to generally assume most characters are young, late teens to mid-20s. It is best to determine the age by the level of the character's education and the player's preference." So there you have it, right from the author. Superheroes are presumptively late teens to mid-20s, starting out. Assuming a typical superhero who developed their powers right around adolescence, let's say 13 years old, right? Classic puberty equals superpower storytelling. That would mean that a starting superhero is 0 to 12 years removed from getting their powers. That means that a superhero with slow motion control should appear to be anywhere from 13 to 19 at the outside. If you're playing a typical starting superhero who's maybe 23 years old, that's kind of the superhero sweet spot, like out of college but not yet boring. If this character's got slow motion control, they're looking about 18 years old. That is, as a magazine at the truck stop would put it, barely legal. You want to play a college-aged superhero with slow motion control? We're talking about some high school shit. We're talking about maybe 15, 16 years old. Physical beauty, a measure of your ability to charm and impress others, is not at any goddamn plus six for a 15-year-old. You know who's famously not charming and impressive? 15-year-olds, as I can tell you from personal fucking experience. And what's weird is that, like, everybody goes through all the ages up to their last age, right? The implication here would be that over the course of your life, you lose like 6 points of physical beauty at some point before age 50. Because otherwise, everybody should be getting a plus six to physical beauty when they're at this, you know, tender age of 13 to 25 or whatever the prime superhero years are. You know, if being a 50-year-old who looks 25 gives you a plus five to physical beauty, shouldn't regular non-slow motion 25-year-olds have that same plus six? It only works if the 50-year-old takes a minus six penalty for age somewhere along the line and then this offsets it. But no such penalty is apparent. So we're left with the inescapable conclusion that people in their late 20s and particularly in their high school years are just hot as hell. I'm not saying that. Heroes Unlimited is saying that. Although in the defense of this game, nothing that it says is intentional. Just bear that in mind. This superpower, like everything in this book, is just an unfortunate and fully unconscious agglomeration of errors and nonsense. By the way, this is even worse for like an alien species that has slow motion control, because if you got this power from birth, you could easily be rocking a plus six physical beauty for looking, I don't know, 12 years old. But no need to dwell on that. 15 is young enough. It's already the dumbest thing on this page. Today we're discussing page 289 of Heroes Unlimited. We're in the major super abilities section, which we're actually making quite a dent in. It's going to be over sooner than you think, just as I'm starting to get into a rhythm with it. But if I was starting to get predictable, hopefully today's episode will be a cure for that. Because I bet you thought, if you looked ahead, that I was going to be talking about the first power on this page, Sonic Absorption and Reflection. Why not? It's a really dumb power. We've discussed it on the podcast before, back when we talked about Alter Physical Structure Fire. We did a little on-mic experiment where I rolled a new power for a fire character who did a Nova Blast and their powers mutated, and I rolled Sonic Absorption and Reflection, and I talked a little bit about how it's a barely useful power in terms of actual Sonic attacks. Like, you can't shoot Sonic Blasts, you're just immune to Sonic Blasts. So your combat abilities are kind of contingent on someone else having cool Sonic powers, and you can, like, cause noises in your environment to repeat. It's very niche. It's another Aaron Oliver power. But upon close inspection and, you know, sort of accounting for different styles of play, Sonic Absorption and Reflection actually is maybe one of my favorite Aaron Oliver powers, because it's sort of hiding under the veneer of, like, I am Sonic Man, you know, with the Sonic immunity that the power puts right up front. But if you look beneath that surface, it's actually a really cool espionage power for a very low-key superhero. If you skip down to the third subpower, you find a pretty effective sonar-slash-radar ability that allows you to navigate in the dark and stuff, really good for spy stuff. It's not quite as good as the radar power found elsewhere, but it's pretty good. This is one of those cases where the trademark Aaron Oliver nerf, the limited use of radar per day, actually would add some useful tension to this power, because it means that you can operate in the dark or blinded or kind of perceive things around corners possibly, but only a certain amount of time each day, so there's a little drama there. Going into an unknown situation, do I activate the radar sense? Similarly, where it's really at with this power is the, quote, other abilities and bonuses, just the miscellaneous stuff tacked on at the end. It's deceptively powerful. Sense of hearing, twice as good as normal, and can filter out background noise. So you can pick out individual conversations in a crowd. So if you're walking in a city and, you know, there's a couple of people having a secret conversation across the street, you can hone in on that, hear well enough to pick it up, and filter out all the background noise to pick up exactly what they're saying. Super useful for a spy. And you've got a 60 plus 2% chance per level to remember and recognize exotic sounds. It specifies this isn't for regular sounds. So this is going to be like, I recognize the sound of the bad guy's engine when he's pulling up to the bar that we're all in. Or I hear a gunshot and it's like, oh yeah, I recognize that weapon. I can recognize the voice that I heard once at a party. Just great spy stuff. So I'm unexpectedly, for me as for you, I'm sure, I'm unexpectedly a fan of sonic absorption slash reflection. The quote-unquote main powers are garbage, but the side powers, I would play a spy with those abilities. It's pretty cool. Now, ironically though, the other power on this page, sonic flight, a classic superhero ability, the ability to fly very fast, this is where Palladium drops the ball, and they drop it as usual with inconsistency. Super speed is always going to be a problem for role-playing games. The ability to move so fast, it screws up your round structure, right? It screws up like table time, because one person can take more actions than everybody else. It screws up the physics of your game, because objects that move as fast as a character like the Flash can move should have all kinds of weird interactions with their environment that are going to be really hard to capture in game mechanics. You can do whatever you want. You just got to be consistent so we know what we're talking about. But as always, Palladium fails to deliver on this. Way, way back, page 72, over 200 pages ago, we established general rules for how much damage super speed attacks do. Because there's all kinds of things that can move really fast in this game. Everything from fighter jets to bionic characters with super speed legs to diving mutant eagles. All of those are possible things that would be moving really fast in a superhero fight. Therefore, we have a general rule for how much damage super speed does. Plus 4 damage for every 20 miles per hour. All you would have had to do to get this power right is to simply use that rule. Now, that would be a lot of damage, I grant you, because sonic flight allows you to move quite fast. The exact speed you can go is subject to debate. It says here you can go at Mach 1. Quote, that's approximately 700 miles per hour, or about 1 mile every 5 seconds, and 11.6 miles per minute. First of all, Mach 1 is not 700 miles per hour. Number two, 11.6 miles per minute is not 700 miles per hour. That speed actually ends up cheating the character of like a quarter mile of movement per round. But in any case, it's pretty damn fast. Let's take the 700 miles per hour figure. You divide that by 20, it's 35. Multiply that by 4, that's 140. You should be getting a plus 140 damage from hitting somebody at full speed with this power, according to the rules given earlier. I mean, 140 is a lot of damage, I'm not going to deny it. However, you also take damage when you hit things that fast. And it takes time to get up to that speed. You got to sacrifice multiple attacks to use a super speed attack. Please don't get me wrong. I'm not saying the rules on page 72 aren't garbage. They are. But they are pre-existing garbage. They are, at this point, nostalgic for me. Way back in page 72, was I ever so young. And they're there. They're there for you to use. And they're not super overpowered. You sacrifice 3 attacks to get a plus 140 damage. That's probably a little better than you can do with 3 separate attacks, but a little less versatile, fair enough. For whatever reason, though, the author felt the need in Sonic Flight to heavily nerf these damage numbers. And in fact, to give much smaller bonuses than you would expect for this kind of speed. You know how many extra attacks you get per melee for being able to move 700 miles per hour? 1. 1 extra attack. The same as you get for being able to run 220 miles per hour with the extraordinary speed minor ability. 1/3 the speed. You do get a nice fat bonus to SDC. Obviously, you gotta have that structural damage capacity for realism as you're soaring at Mach 1 through the sky. And then there's all this other miscellaneous combat bonuses while you're flying, etc., etc. Here's the important thing. Instead of following the game's own goddamn rules about super speed combat, this power gives a totally new account of what kinds of attacks super speed characters can do. And that's the dumbest thing on this page, with an addendum that we'll get to in a moment. Quote, Sonic Two-Fisted Punch, Ram style, which is how you gotta order your burgers at In-N-Out, guys. Sonic Two-Fisted Punch, Ram style, at 400 miles per hour or greater, inflicts 1d4 times 10 damage to one's opponent and 3d6 to the Sonic character, counts as 2 attacks. You spend 2 attacks, you hit somebody at 400 miles per hour or faster, you do, on average, a mere 25 damage. We're talking about maybe a 1/6 of the damage you should be getting from this, according to the previous rules. You can get that up to 2d4 times 10 damage with a flying body block at 400 miles per hour or faster, but that counts as 3 attacks, and you take 5d6 damage from it, for an average of 50 damage. Theoretically, I think this is a balance issue, but it isn't one. I think it's perceived as one, but if you compare it to, like, an automatic weapons burst, no contest, especially when you consider that you don't take damage for mowing people down with a machine gun, that's a much better option than ramming into people with your sonic flight. There's just no need to control the power this much. There's no need to rewrite the rules for this one power. However, never fear, even though your damage potential as a sonic flyer is much lower than it should be according to the rules for super speed that we were promised earlier in the book, you do get some compensation. You get night vision out to 1,000 feet for reasons I can't fathom. I mean, I guess theoretically it could be so that you're like a better flyer, you can find landing places, but I hope you're not flying around at 1,000 feet up at Mach 1. There's some fine side benefits about, like, you can survive in thin air, you're immune to G-forces up to a certain point, you can hold your breath a long time, you're resistant to cold damage, all the things you need to be able to do to, like, fly around like a human jet. That's fair enough. It really is just the damage that seems way out of line. And this is the tippity-top of the dumb things about this power. Fans did notice, as is so often the case, it seems to me. Palladium fans pick up on things that were missed by the author and ask about them and try to follow them up. Allow me to quote to you from an FAQ page on the Palladium Books website. This is a document entitled Superpowers Questions. So this is not just from some random place on the internet. This is from Palladium Books' official FAQ, a question that they received and answered. Quote, "Winged and wingless flight, as well as extraordinary speed, have damage listed as +4 every 20 miles per hour. Is this bonus still applicable to sonic flight and sonic speed? If not, what would be a good guideline be for damage done by characters with those powers?" That's the question, the very reasonable question. Hey, all these other powers, and this writer doesn't notice, but also the general rules given in the superpower combat section, all say the same thing, +4 damage for every 20 miles per hour. Did you mean to write that that also applies to these other, like, primary speed powers, the major super abilities for moving fast? And if not, how should I figure it out? Because these numbers are clearly wrong. They're way too low. They're like a sixth of what they should be. And here's the answer. Quote, "The damages for those powers, sonic flight, sonic speed, are already listed on page 289 to 290 of Heroes Unlimited 2, meaning second edition. Could you be more dismissive? Could you be more, like, almost passive-aggressive? You can really hear Kevin Sambita's voice. You know, this fan has asked, hey, I couldn't help but notice, in almost all of the powers about going fast, it gives the same rules for going fast. But in the two main powers for going fast, it gives different rules, and those rules are fucked. Did you perhaps mean to say that the regular rules apply to those powers?" We're leading the witness a little bit, but it's okay. We're trying to help out Kevin Sambita here. We're trying to give him a way out so that he could be like, oh yeah, of course that's what I meant. But no, the answer is the damages for those powers, sonic flight, sonic speed, are already listed on page 289 to 290 of Heroes Unlimited 2. Duh. Man, show some gratitude. This fan is trying to help you out. He noticed that the rules don't work. He's trying to support you. Instead, you shut him down. You just redirect him. It's like, yeah, I know where the I know where those rules are. I'm complaining about them. I read them. That's why. But of course, Sambita misses his shot. He just redirects to his existing rules, and as a result, we're stuck with a situation where, say, wingless flight, the minor superpower that allows you to fly at like 220 miles per hour, already at level 1, you can get more damage out of dive bombing somebody at that speed with that power than you can at dive bombing somebody at 700 miles per hour with sonic speed. So the dumbest thing on this page is the inconsistency and the unnecessary nerfing of this power yet again. But the super special extra dumb thing behind the velvet rope for today's page is the fact that fans offered the author a chance to walk this back on a golden platter, and he turned it down. Because what's more likely, that Heroes Unlimited has a bad rule, or that you actually hit somebody harder moving 220 miles an hour than 700 miles an hour? Obviously, it's the latter. How dare you complain about your flight speed? You already fly fast enough to see in the dark. What else do you want? Today we're discussing page 290 of Heroes Unlimited. Today, it's going to be maybe a quick one, appropriately, because we're discussing sonic speed. We're still in the major super abilities section. And what we're discussing today, obviously, is the primary speed power. Sonic speed is just about the fastest you can go in this game, you know, with superpowers, as usual. military equipment soundly thrashes any and all superpowers when it comes to, you know, damage or speed or anything. It's pretty easy to build a vehicle and go faster than this. But when it comes to putting on that spandex and running down the street, going pat, pat, pat on the pavement, this is the fastest you can go with a single power. As we've discussed before, it turns out that by using the various ill-advised speed multipliers and different powers, you can actually achieve a speed quite a lot faster than this. But to me, that's clearly a bug, not a feature. It's not something that's intended to be possible. This is meant to be the go-to speed power. Now, the rules text here only takes up half a page. It's very concise. On the previous page, we got a little blurb that basically tells us, A, this is the fastest of the super speed powers. B, we apologize for it. They don't say it in those words. They say, quote, "Despite what one might think, super speed in hand-to-hand combat requires a comparatively slower, more measured, and controlled pace, but the results are still devastating." In other words, you might think that if you could move at Mach 1, you'd get a lot more done at the speed bag than an average Joe. This is not the case for various reasons we don't need to go into here, but it's pretty good anyway. Deal with it. But I don't think you should. I don't think you should deal with it, because this power should be a damn sight better than it is, and we have lots of points of comparison. Let's just quickly break down what you actually get with this power. You get bonus attacks per melee. We love those. I mean, we hate those because they make combat last so long. But in terms of optimizing a character, they're a major benefit. You get an extra one at level 1, then again at 3, 9, and 12. So, okay, one extra attack per melee to begin with. Now, that's the same as you get with extraordinary speed, which only allows you to run like 220 miles an hour to start, as opposed to Mach 1, but it does grow over time. So, okay, more on that later. Of course, you get a tremendous bonus to SDC. You get probably 100 extra SDC. And yes, I know the stresses of high-speed travel, etc., etc. As we've discussed many times, this is pretty inconsistent, and I stand by disliking it, especially when we're talking about huge values like 100 SDC, but fair enough. I'm not going to begrudge this power what little benefit it grants. You get a bonus to your physical endurance. I guess you got good cardio. Bonus to initiative, bonus to strike and parry. You get an automatic dodge, which is very good, admittedly. However, on the topic of dodging, get a load of this. Quote, "Dodging bullets, energy blasts, projectiles, and thrown objects can be attempted, but without benefit of any dodge bonuses. Unmodified dice roll only." And then in parentheses, "It's difficult even for a super fast character to dodge these fast-moving, long-range, and often silent or quiet attacks." Two things I want to point out here, and they both go to the overall problem with this power, which is that for the supposed supreme speed power in this game, it's weird that they took this opportunity to effectively rewrite the rules of speed in combat to specifically nerf this character, such that you're not even in the same league if you've got this power as characters who achieve this same speed through other means. First of all, when it comes to dodging bullets or energy weapons, the standard rule is that you can, if you're a regular ass person who can run, you know, 15 miles an hour, just some average Jane, you know, maybe this is your first session, you haven't found the magic sword that's going to transform you into a beautiful 6 foot tall man yet. So you're just a person. That person can attempt to dodge bullets and energy blasts, but with no bonuses and with a -4 penalty. And that penalty can be waived if either the assailant isn't really trying to hurt you, so it's, I guess, just like a random spray or whatever, you're just caught in the crossfire, or if you have the initiative, which is like 50% of the time, all other things being equal. It's just a straight die roll with no particular bonuses or penalties. The very same roll offered here as one of the perks of being able to move at goddamn Mach 1. So that's number one. Number two, take another look at that list. Quote, "Dodging bullets, energy blasts, projectiles, and thrown objects use these rules." Now, where did this come from? Because before, we've talked about dodging bullets and energy blasts pretty regularly. And sometimes when we talk about the difficulty of doing that, arrows make the cut too. But there was no indication before when we were talking about, you know, having a snowball fight or throwing marbles at your friend's head in the summer, that you're not allowed to dodge those attacks or that you get no bonus to your dodge roll. But now suddenly it's a rule. Now for Sonic Speed Guy alone, you know, even though you can move at Mach 1, you are still at a flat 50-50 chance when it comes to dodgeball, for example. And you should be grateful for that, these rules seem to imply. Dodgeball would be an unwinnable game if you couldn't move at the speed of sound. Barring a bad throw, every ball would connect. There'd be nothing you could do. It's like a firing squad out there in PE class. But because you have special speed powers, we're going to let you make a terrible dodge roll with no bonuses compared to all their strike bonuses to try to get out of the way of that dodgeball. I don't know why this change was made or if the author in fact realized that it was a change, but I think there has to have been some intent behind it because we see it all through this power. These little changes to the way the rules work for this character to make speed less effective. We could look at damage, for example. The Sonic Speed guy is beating other speedsters by 4 to 7 points of damage per turn, assuming that you're standing stock still. If you're moving, then you can get that speed much higher. Like say you've got extraordinary speed and you want to, you know, run by and clothesline somebody. If you get all the way up to 220 miles per hour, that's plus 44 damage. Now granted, that does take half of your melee attacks, but that already puts you just about on par with the damage output of the Sonic Speed character, and 220 is like, that's baby's first super speed attack. You know, by second or third level, you're readily outperforming the Sonic Speed character on damage. Once again, you can really see the outline of the intuitive and completely wrong-headed approach to power design that's on display in this game, especially with the major powers. As soon as numbers start to get a little bit high, I feel like the author of this game gets skittish, takes the opportunity to rewrite the rules to bring those numbers down, and then adds a bunch of subsidiary benefits to try to, like, pad it out. You can see that Sambita did this to a lot of Oliver's powers. If you look at the original version, it's a simple power with really good bonuses. Sambita would take them, bring the bonuses down, and then add a bunch of other bullshit that's, like, tangentially related. So we see the same thing here with Sonic Speed, with Sambita's own design. In addition to being able to move at Mach 1, which turns out to be, like, half as good as moving at 220 miles per hour with a minor superpower, you also have a leaping ability. You can leap 60 feet high or 100 feet lengthwise. Now, there's no provision for landing here. No indication that you wouldn't take damage from a 60-foot fall if you elect to jump that high. So I guess this is good for getting up onto buildings, but you wouldn't want to use it to travel because you have no special resistance to falling. I guess that's what the extra SDC is for. You're just covered in a protective chub. More paunch for the launch, if you will. So you can do these 60-foot leaps and then just, like, slam right into the ground. Like, I'm fine, I'm fine. You also get, quote, superior vision about 5 times better than normal humans, and, quote, night vision 500 feet. Why? You know, I can just about talk myself into believing that Sonic Flight should give you night vision, because you're up there in the air, and you may need to be able to see down at night to see where you're going. Supersonic Flight evokes, like, transcontinental travel, so, you know, maybe there's going to be more nighttime overland travel, and you want to be able to watch out. But on foot like this, and 500 feet too, such a weird distance, I don't have the remotest idea why night vision is connected to super speed in the author's mind, but here it is. And finally, I guess the dumbest thing on this page, the killer at the end. Note, the acts of taking off and stopping each count as one melee action. I mentioned before that we were going to return to the attacks per melee for this power. So you get a bonus attack per melee at first level, then another at 3, then another at 9, then another at 12. Theoretically, you get one at 12, but let's be honest, unless you're going to play this game for a decade, you're not getting to level 12. So realistically, over the course of an actual campaign that anyone would play, you're getting to 9th level. That's a total of 3 extra attacks per melee over your whole career. You start with only one. However, to use this power effectively, you want to be in motion, right? You want to be using your body block slash ram. You want to be, you know, moving from foe to foe across the battlefield. You want to be moving. You want to be fast. To start moving fast costs one melee action in itself. And to stop costs another melee action in itself. Now, what happens if you end a melee round without stopping? I don't know. It would be relatively easy for another character to have more attacks per melee than you. You don't get a huge bonus. So you could easily end up at the end of a melee round with somebody you're fighting having 3 attacks per melee left and you're all out. So within the fiction, you're still running at 700 miles per hour, but at the same time, your opponent gets to take like 3 free shots at you while you're in more or less the same place, even if they don't have super speed, which is weird. But this will probably happen a lot because if you wanted to stop, it would take you a whole action. Please note that that means running and punching someone and then stopping next to them so that you can punch them again next turn. That in itself, just starting to run and ceasing to run, takes 2 of your actions, which means, say, at first level, you're at a net minus 1 action compared to other characters, because you only get 1 bonus turn, but you lose 2 turns for starting and stopping. By level 3, you're breaking even, and then only by level 9 at the very end of the campaign are you actually benefiting from these extra attacks per melee. Unless you just stand still or elect to jog around the battlefield, which somehow ends up being faster than running at 700 miles per hour. Compared to Extraordinary Speed, a minor super ability that grants speed about a third of what this power does, it doesn't take an action to start and stop with that power, and it grants a plus 1 attack per melee, so the minor power once again turns out to be better here. You can run up to somebody, hit them, and then stop. That's just 1 action instead of 3. This also means that you can make 2 super speed attacks per turn if that's what you want to do, like run by clothesline attacks, because each one takes half of your melee actions. Compared to Sonic Speed, where you can do a body block tackle that does 50 damage. That takes half of your actions. But it also takes one of your actions to start running and another action to stop. So you can only get off one of these in a turn because your other actions are spoken for. I also want to point out that this means you're slower off the blocks. We covered this before when we talked about the general rules for super speed in combat, but this means that if you have a character with extraordinary speed, a character with sonic speed, and an electric car that tops out at 60 miles an hour, and you line them all up and you have them all go pell-mell toward a single target, right? You got three bad guys lined up and the car, the extraordinary speed person, and the sonic speed person are all going toward their separate bad guy. They actually hit in chronological order from slowest to fastest. The car can get there right away, one action, to run them down. The extraordinary speed character, if they want to hit them with an extraordinary speed attack, it takes half their melee actions. The sonic speed character has to first spend an action to start moving, then an additional half of their actions to hit at super speed. So the faster you are, the longer it takes to get there. So I guess in a twisted way, it's still dumb, but it kind of makes sense because the general rule in Palladium games, I guess, is the faster you are, the longer it takes you to get places. And the fewer attacks per melee you get because you're too busy going fast to do things quickly. So according to this bizarro logic, I suppose it does follow that if you have the best super speed power, you are the worst super speedster. But it's still dumb. Also, just a side note, our old friend Commander Gouge from the beginning of the book is on this page. This, I think, may be the apex of reused art in this book. Between pages 286 and 297, there are six pieces of art, three of which have already appeared in the book before. So if you're wondering why nothing is happening on the Instagram, it's not my fault. To achieve the full Palladium book effect, just go back and look through my Instagram again and pretend you haven't seen the art before. Today we're discussing page 291 of Heroes Unlimited. We've been talking for a couple of days now about super speed. My personal disappointment, because I do like super speed powers, that Heroes Unlimited has just dropped the ball. Like, extraordinary speed was very good. The minor power, extraordinary speed, is quite good. The other powers relating to speed, it's like the faster you go, the worse they get. That's frustrating. But today we have something that I don't know if it's equally frustrating or if it's just kind of wonderful in its strangeness, if this is like tipped over my exasperation meter, and now I'm just giddy. What we arrive at today is spin at high velocity. We're still in the major super abilities section. This is the last of the super speed powers, by far the goofiest, and clearly the best. I don't know why. I don't know why this had to be the good one. But if you want to play a super speedster and you don't want to play a strange visitor from the planet Fish, this is the way to do it. Spin at high velocity does just what it says on the tin. It allows you to spin very fast. But the magic is in the details. First of all, right out of the gate, your speed level. Your rotational speed is 220 miles per hour plus 20 miles per hour per level of experience. So you spin around as fast as an extraordinary speed character runs. Your actual overland speed is less impressive. It's 100 miles per hour plus 10 per level of experience. So in terms of overland speed, this is the slowest of the super speed powers. Even extraordinary speed is like twice this fast. However, that rotational speed is very good, especially because you can generate it while staying in one place. So those are the basics. That's the speed you can move your hands at to hit people, and the speed that you can move overland to get places fast. Two basic super speed powers. But that's not really all that you want from super speed, is it? Especially not as a major power. You want a suite of other goofy, you know, stupid flash tricks, like from the Silver Age in the old days. You know, you couldn't live a day in Central City without, like, the Flash running around the city to create atmospheric pressure to cause rain to help local farmers. You know, shit like that. Now, Palladium loves to give tangential side powers to characters with major powers. However, they really fucked it up with Sonic Flight and Sonic Speed. What did you get? Resistance to cold, bonuses to SDC, able to breathe thin air, night vision? You might as well have picked them from a hat. Whereas spin at high velocity gives you a number of very stupid but very on-brand tricks. Number one, quote, deflect projectiles and gas attacks while spinning. Remember how last page we talked about how despite the fact that you can run at Mach 1, you still usually lose at dodgeball because you get no dodge bonuses to dodge thrown objects? Well, it turns out if you can spin at 220 miles per hour, you're immune to fucking bullets. They just spin right off you. Same with thrown weapons, not just dodgeballs, but also knives, shurikens, and arrows, it says. Gas attacks, blown away, no effect on you. Now granted, there is a 30% chance that deflected projectiles will hit a bystander, so there is risk involved here. You may become a tragic super spinny hero, it is the 90s after all. And there's a special note that psionics, magic, and energy attacks are not deflected and do full damage. So just in case you were getting into a fight with your GM that mind control should also spin right off your high velocity bod. No, in fact, the specter of possession looms no matter how fast you spin. Secondly, you can create and control mini tornadoes. The Flash used to do this all the time. You spin in one spot for like a round, you stop and it creates a little tornado of air around you that spins off, and inexplicably, by concentrating on the tornado, you can then control it and make it move around and do what you want. Like after you roll a bowling ball and then you stand there and move your body and hope that through process of sympathetic magic, you can affect the ball. You can do that with a tornado and it works. That's how good you are at spinning. Makes no goddamn sense, but it's wonderful. It's thematic. The tornado is actually good. Like, it's an effective tactic against some enemies because you can use it to almost indefinitely incapacitate people as long as you concentrate on the tornado. And then once you drop it, then you leave your target dizzy for a few rounds. You can also use it to pick things up and throw them around. Versatile, mechanically well implemented. If only this kind of care and attention could have been paid to a power that is not the stupidest fucking thing in the world, we'd really have something here with the superhero game. You can fling debris around you indiscriminately. It says here, quote, pebbles, sand, dirt, dust, paper, and garbage. Compose your little trash storm. This does very minor damage, like 1d6, and it's sort of a weak to middling debuff, -4 to initiative, strike, parry, and dodge to everyone in the vicinity. And it's all you can do while it's active. So this is pretty situational, but a decent 20-foot radius debuff. It's just another nice utility power to stack on top. You know, you already got your tornado. You already got your defensive applications. This is just another thing. Also, you can tunnel into the ground. The mechanics here are admittedly a bit dubious. It says you tunnel into the ground like a drill. However, quote, the tunnel's height will be the same as the character's height. For every 10 feet of tunneling, the character has a 1 to 30% chance of striking a large rock slash boulder, tree roots, metal piping, and or chunks of concrete, causing 3d6 damage to himself as he punches through it or spins around it after the initial impact. So you can get a 10-foot length of tunnel per level of experience, but the tunnel is as tall as you are. I really don't know what this means. Because you're not going through the ground in a standing position, right? You're going feet first. But again, who can think about the details at a time like this? You can drill through the ground. If somebody puts a wall up, seems like a very effective way to stop a super speedster, you can spin around and drill under it. A classic. The Flash does this. Superman does this. Not now, but back when comics were stupid, it happened all the time. I just can't get over how much better this is than the other implementations. Like, throughout this section, we keep running into these things where the author feels like to make a power realistic, he has to explain how it works. Like with intangibility, you know, it's your molecular density and affecting the bonds between molecules, which makes no sense and results in all this incomprehensible garbage about how the power is supposed to interact with the physical world. You know, you can walk on smoke, yet you can also choke on smoke because it can get into your body. That's weird. It's weird that I can stand on it, but also if I walk into it, it directly enters my bloodstream. Here, to account for friction, the author gives us the usual pseudoscience spiel. Quote, the character can spin himself at high velocity, but no ground friction is caused because the character is actually riding on a small cushion of air. You know, frictionless air. And yet, the implementation of this bullshit pseudoscience is actually good, because another ability you have is that you can rise straight up into the air and hover up to 10 feet per level of experience off the ground on a larger cushion of air. You can be a fucking sky dancer with this power. This is something I didn't even know I wanted until I read the fine print of this power. And I'm like, how have I never played a sky dancer before? It's like playing a character with helicopter blades on their head, my other dream, only more intimate. It's your own arms. You are the helicopter. Similarly, you get leaps, just like the Sonic Speed character, 10 feet up or 20 feet lengthwise per level of experience, but it's a spinning leap, and it kind of makes sense that it wouldn't cause damage to you because you land on a cushion of air. Because as established, you don't spin on the ground, you spin on the air. Hey, guess what else you get? 360-degree vision while spinning, so you can't be surprised from behind. Incredibly thematic, incredibly useful, incredibly weird. On the topic of adaptations to your power, right? Like, if you can move at super speed, you must be as hard as a fucking brick for structural reasons. Okay, that's inconsistent and dull, but okay, I see the connection. Sonic speed, built like a pile of bricks. Okay. What are the natural consequences of supernatural spinning ability? I don't know, how about an excellent sense of balance, an excellent sense of speed and direction, which yes, of course you would need to keep your bearings while you're spinning, and it's actually useful. If somebody ties you up in the back of a truck and kidnaps you, you're like, oh, hey, don't worry, guys. As a master of spinning, I have to know how fast I'm moving and keep track of direction at all times. So I know exactly where we've been driven. Very comic booky, very useful, not boring at all. And then you get all the miscellanea, bonuses to strike, parry, dodge, etc., etc. You get a +6 bonus to inflict damage from punches and kicks. but this plus 6 to inflict damage while spinning only is not explicitly the speed bonus. So my feeling is the standard super speed bonus to damage still applies to spinning. That FAQ entry that we talked about, where that helpful fan was like, hey, did you mean to allow the normal damage bonus to apply to Sonic Speed and Sonic Flight? And Kevin Sabito was like, no, if I had meant that, I would have said that. The rules are on the page and there that they are and blah, 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 blah. Remember that? That FAQ entry does not affect spin at high velocity, which means, for my money, you get a plus 6 to damage, plus whatever damage would normally come from the speed you're moving. The damage bonus is probably just an additional bonus because of like your torque or whatever. If this is the case, and you can do 220 miles per hour of rotational movement, mind you, from a standing position, this means you can clobber bad guys with a spinning clothesline like Zangief or Hagar, who, by the way, is the innovator of the spinning clothesline. Just to set the record straight, Zangief learned it from Hagar. It's not a Sambo move, it's a pro wrestling move. That's right, your precious champion of Sambo wrestling, he got his signature move from pro wrestling. And it is pro wrestling, not from fucking catch wrestling, not from fucking Scottish backhold or whatever Hagar's original training is in. I honestly have no idea who I'm talking to right now. I feel like I have a beef with some invisible person at the other end of this podcast. Like, I feel so strongly about this, I feel like my opposite number must be out there somewhere saying, no, fucking Sambo, forever. Anyway, the spinning clothesline, it's a badass move. It's a pro wrestling move. You know it's good because Zangief stole it. And with this already amazing major super ability of spin at high velocity, you too can use the spinning clothesline to amazing effect. I mean, if you can stand in one spot and you can go 220 miles per hour of rotational velocity with an additional plus 6 damage, we're talking about 50 extra damage added to your punch. You combine that with your spinning leap, maybe do a leap attack. You could jump between two bad guys, clothesline them both for 50 plus damage. We're talking about a pretty decent damage output. And then if they start to gang up on you, you drill into the fucking earth and come up behind them. This power is so good. The side powers, the implementation of super speed that does not negate the earlier super speed rules, so it all kind of fits together mechanically. The dumbest thing on this page is only that Palladium finally got their shit together on implementing super speed on this, the very silliest of super speed powers. Except for the part where you spin, this is for sure the mechanical implementation of being a gimmicky super speedster like the Silver Age Flash. I guess it's somehow appropriate, though, that given this is a Palladium game, if you want the rules that work, you have to go to the goofiest power. One way or another, your character's got to be dumb, and you might as well just embrace it. I know I have. I am fully into this power. Today we're discussing page 292 of Heroes Unlimited. We're still in the major super abilities section, and today we're discussing stretching. This is Mr. Fantastic powers, this is Elastic Man powers, this is Plastic Man powers. I'm sorry, did I say Elastic Man? I do apologize. Obviously I was conflating Elastic Lad and Elongated Man. But as you can tell by the long list there, this is truly a classic superhero power. Long, long history, quite a pedigree in comic books for this power, and understandably so. If you're in a visual medium, stretching is great because it allows the character to take on all kinds of visually interesting forms. It's great for plotting because you have all kinds of different unrelated sub-powers you can have. Like, the ability to turn yourself into whatever shape you want really lends itself to lots of creative solutions to problems, which is a lot of what superhero comics were about back in the old days. Heroes creatively using their powers to solve problems. Role-playing games do a lot of this as well. And specifically, Heroes Unlimited is pretty good at coming up with wacky implementations of major powers. First of all, you can stretch all your limbs out to various lengths, and the game enumerates the maximum length of each of your body parts. Neck, 15 feet, fingers, 5 feet, arms, 20 feet, etc. What I'm not totally clear about is what kind of articulation you have with your stretched limbs. The illustration on this page, about which more later, shows long, stretchy arms, but with no indication that they have any extra flexibility. They're still just bent at the normal elbow joints. This is kind of important because one of the entries on this list, on this table of how far you can stretch your body parts, is, quote, nose, ears, toes, only 1 foot. 1 foot as in the unit of measurement, not 1 foot as in the body part, presumably. I'm not sure what would be gained by stretching your ears out a full foot. Or like, I don't know about you, but my control over my nose is fairly limited. I'm not sure what I could do with it if it were a foot long. I think it would just hang there. This is like the mutant elephant all over again. Other sub-powers. You can flatten your whole body out to as little as 2 inches thick. This allows you to wrap people up like you're a big creepy tarp with muscles inside. It's good for prowling because you can just go flat, be overlooked. And it says here that, quote, flattening or allowing oneself to be flattened, i.e. run over by a tank or steamroller, will reduce damage from being run over by heavy vehicles or large heavy falling objects, i.e. the side of a building, to a comparatively tiny 5% of the normal damage for that incident. Passing over the fact that that's not what IE means, 5% is like a little too high for me, and 2 inches is a little too thick for me. This is subjective. This is my personal taste. I feel like this makes it weird. like if I go into a room and I'm walking around and then suddenly the floor animates and oh my gosh, it was Plastic Man. He had flattened himself on the ground and he was like paper thin and then he bloops up and there's Plastic Man. That's like a fun prank that Plastic Man would play. If I walk into a room and like my feet sink that little bit because Plastic Man has spread himself to a 2-inch thickness over the floor, then that's super weird. That's like a horror movie. Similarly, a steamroller running over Plastic Man and leaving like a flattened film behind, and there's like Plastic Man's face totally flat on the ground and then he pops back up, that's comedy. A steamroller running over a 2-inch thick layer of Plastic Man and like there is still a lot of crunching and bruising, but Plastic Man lives, that's horrific. That's incredibly gross. So I do not approve of this 2-inch thickness. But that's not the only strange shape you can take on. You can also go to morphing ball form. In a compact little ball, you're like 1.5 feet in diameter. And this has stealth applications as well, as described in the following passage. In this condensed state, the elastic character can better hide. And then in parentheses it says, quote, nothing here but a ball, plus 10% to the prowl skill. Nothing here but a ball, but by way of explaining how you hide when you're a ball. It's not so much that you're rolling behind the couch or like hiding under the tablecloth. I guess you just become a little ball, the color of your outfit, and you just lie there. And then the armed guards who are looking for you peer into the room, they scan the floor, and then they get on their little security radio.
This is Gamma Squad. The room is clear. There's nothing here but a little ball. Over.
So that's a great trick. Notably, you also get a plus 10% to prowl in the dark, as specified here, which, in my mind, applies whether you're a ball or not. I think, regardless of what geometrical shape you are, if any, hiding in the dark is a good plan. But apparently that's especially so when you're ball-shaped. You can also reshape yourself to fit into small areas or get out of restraints. It says here you can fit into a duffel bag, you can get through bars or pipes, get out of straitjackets, ropes, handcuffs, etc., etc. This gives you an escape artist skill of 60% plus 3% per level of experience, which on the one hand is good, but on the other hand, if you're stretchy and malleable enough to turn yourself into a tiny ball or a flat tarp or essentially one big rope that can tie up 6 people, as we're about to discuss, I feel like a 6 out of 10 chance to get yourself out of handcuffs is slightly low. Anyway, yeah, you can turn yourself into like a big rope and stretch yourself around and tie someone up. You are an extremely good entangler with the stretching ability. To get out at all, your opponent has to have 4 times your strength. And if they do have that much strength, right? Like if you're an average person tying up a person with a strength of 40, which is really, really good, like better than most vampires and demigods good, it still takes an average of 30 seconds to pry you off. This means that even if you have average strength, the majority of characters will have no chance to get out when you wrap them up this way. And even those who do are going to be incapacitated for multiple rounds trying to pull you off. Or you can extend yourself to tie up more people, 3 to 6 people, but then the physical strength needed to pull you off is only double your own strength. So if you're super strong, this is a good tactic. But again, even if they've got the strength to get out, you're now incapacitating multiple opponents. Like maybe, let's say the team is attacked by 6 assailants, you could rope them all up and they're all incapacitated for 2 full combat rounds, if not more. Yeah, I misspoke earlier. It's an average of 45 seconds, which is 3 full rounds. 3.5 actually would be the mathematical average. 3 full rounds of combat, totally incapacitated for 6 assailants, that's a tremendous tactical advantage. So stretching is great for entangling people. As long as you got some teammates who can hit those people with some kind of damage without destroying the long garishly colored cord that you have become, you're doing great. You're winning that fight. But the tricks don't stop there. You can bounce. You can increase your speed by turning yourself into a big bouncy ball. You can glide. Although, weirdly, your gliding speed is limited to 20 miles per hour, even if you fall out of an airplane, which I don't know what's wrong with you that you're incapable of achieving terminal velocity. Just a quirk of your genetic mutation, I guess. The maximum speed you can fall is 20 miles per hour. Good for you. There's a mention here of 2 ploys you can use to entangle foes. Quote, the old rope trick. This is where you turn like your arm into a lasso and lasso people and pin their arms to their sides, and also the squeeze play, quote, a variation on the rope trick in which the snared and entangled opponent is squeezed as the character contracts his body. This can also be done when a victim is completely entrapped. Yes, this can kill, but good aligned characters will never use this ability to torture or kill, only to restrain and subdue. Now, it goes on to say the damage is 1d4 per round, so I don't think this is talking about crushing them to death, because that would take a really long time. At least as long as punching them to death, if not longer. Something that, of course, heroes are happy to do. So I think what they're talking about here is maybe wrapping yourself around someone and suffocating them, which I guess does fall into the nebulous realm of dirty pool in Heroes Unlimited, like things a good person would never do. You could open fire on a group of bad guys and kill them with a machine gun, but you wouldn't, for example, suffocate them, throw boiling water in their face, drown them, or that's it. Those are the three things that a good person would never do. Everything else is on the table. There are some missteps here and there in the implementation on this page, but overall, stretching is a weird power, weirdly implemented, and I appreciate the fact that they really took the time to enumerate all the weird things you can do with it, which are the main value. Much better than just, you know, static bonuses. You know, SDC, bonuses to roll with punch, some extra reach, etc., etc. You really wanted to get into, like, the gliding, the entangling, all that great Plastic Man stuff. Here's the dumbest thing on this page. The illustration at the top of the page, I'll put this on the Instagram, is a dumb-looking alien with a helmet with a plume on it, with slightly longer than usual arms, wielding two swords. This is probably the most boring and ineffective use of stretching I can think of. To slightly increase your reach for sword play. Very slightly. And still bending your arms only at the elbows. This is a rare instance where the dumbest thing really comes down to production constraints, I think. For the most part, the dumb things in Heroes Unlimited are dumb because of dumb writing and dumb editing and dumb ideas, and occasionally dumbness inherited from dumb comic books. Here, the dumbness really does come down to the production constraints of a Palladium book, I feel. There are few powers more visually interesting than stretching. This page alone has maybe six different visually interesting ideas for things you can do with this power, and there's room on the page for an illustration. But Palladium being what it is, instead of an illustration of any one of these cool things, we get a fairly generic picture of some kind of alien with slightly long arms, because that's the art they had around. Despite the fact that this is sort of one of Palladium's flagship games, I mean, by 1998, probably its third top game line, I would think. Nonetheless, the book is absolutely full of art ripped off from other Palladium games. And I would guess this is no exception. This may be originally for Heroes Unlimited, but if it was, it was not for this context. Feel free to get at me on Twitter about this. My guess would be this is either from like an Aliens Unlimited book, or it's from like Rifts or Nightbane or somewhere. Certainly it does not look super heroic, and it is not a good illustration of this very fun superpower. Today we're discussing page 293 of Heroes Unlimited, a day on which we pass judgment. We've been following the epic tale of Aaron Oliver throughout the major super abilities section, and today we have arrived at Super Energy Expulsion, a superpower that is just an amped up version of the energy explosion powers that we saw back in the minor super abilities section. It's a continuity heavy day because I call upon you, dear listener, to act as the jury as we take everything we know about the works of Aaron Oliver and determine who's to blame for the shortcomings they display in this book. So for those of you who are just joining the show or who have maybe forgotten what happened in previous episodes, let's do a recap. Aaron Oliver was a fan of Palladium who wrote a bunch of new powers. They first appeared in the Rifter number 1 back in the Heroes Unlimited revised days, and the powers that he wrote were so good that they got adapted into new powers for Heroes Unlimited 2nd edition. They appear under the byline, typically, of Aaron Oliver and Kevin Sambita, because for each of these powers that appeared in the Rifter, before they could make the transition to being canon in Heroes Unlimited, Kevin Sambita worked his Sambita magic on them and changed them to bring them in line with his incomprehensible vision for the game. So when these powers don't exactly work, which is always, we have to ask ourselves, did Aaron Oliver do this, or did Kevin Sambita do this, or was it some unholy fusion between the two that created the problems that we see, which typically are the same for all the Aaron Oliver powers? It's a cool concept, but the mechanical implementation is a little bit dodgy, and the useful abilities that are part of the superpower are needlessly nerfed, so that the character's sort of spotlight moments are ruined by the fact that they're not even good at the thing they're good at. In the past, I've looked only at the version of Aaron Oliver's powers that are found in this book, but on a wild hair today, because I needed to talk about this very boring superpower of super energy explosion, I decided to dive back into the Rifter number 1 and look up the original version of this power so that we can compare the two and finally lay this controversy to rest who is to blame for the state of Aaron Oliver's powers in Heroes Unlimited? So let's go through this step by step and look at the changes made to Super Energy Explosion with Kevin Sambita's collaboration. First of all, just the basics. All this power does is allow you to shoot extra lasers. That's basically it. This game already had energy explosion powers for shooting out fire or whatever. This power, you take one type of energy, you can shoot that type of energy, and you can extra shoot it. That's the basic concept. So, subpower number one, quote, energy explosion. The player must choose what type of energy his character can unleash. Energy, light, electricity, fire, or sound. This is a notable change. In Aaron Oliver's version, ice was also an option. That was removed for the final version. I don't know why. For the most part, this works just like a normal energy explosion minor power. Does 3d6 damage plus 1d6 per level of experience. You can modulate it in increments of 1d6. However, in Aaron Oliver's original version, there's also a super blast option. And what this does, it's a blast of whatever energy you shoot that is really big. It has an extra bonus to strike. It does 4 times the normal amount of damage, but it takes up half your actions for the melee. It lasts for multiple seconds, so it's like a continuous blast. It's like a fire hose of energy blast. It has a chance of knocking people down or knocking them back from sheer force. It's pretty cool. In the version found here in the book, that is nerfed down to the quote-unquote super blast, the so-called super blast, that does 1d6 times 10 damage plus 1d6 per level of experience, and then an additional 30 damage for characters who are 6th level or higher, which is a really weird way to try to finesse your math. You have to do it as the first attack of the melee round, and it uses up all but one of your actions. So it uses now a variable amount of actions, depending on how many actions you've got, and it uses up all but one of them, but you can't take that action first. You have to shoot the laser first, then take your one remaining action at the end. It no longer lasts for multiple rounds, so it no longer has this kind of fire hose effect. It no longer knocks people over, and because it only does 1d6 times 10 plus 1d6 plus 30 in the case of a character 6th level or higher, a nice, simple, elegant equation, what that comes out to is an amount of damage that is in no way worth the actions you spend on it. It's always less damage than just using those same actions to shoot your regular laser. So in essence, it's been made complicated and useless, and it's taken away the distinctive thing of, like, not only can you shoot a fire blast, but now you can shoot, like, a continuous spray of flame. Or not only can you shoot a brick ray, but now you can shoot, like, a full screen Marvel versus Capcom style, you know, 6-foot-tall brick ray that pushes people back. So on the first count, energy expulsion and the quote-unquote super blast, I would say Kevin Sambita's interference made this power much, much worse. That is my argument to you, the jury. You can decide for yourselves. Number two, absorb, channel, and fire any energy type. This is a totally new addition. This was not in the original Rifter version. Quote, the super being can momentarily absorb massive amounts of energy, the equivalent of something that would inflict 80 points of damage or more, channel it through his body, stopping the energy from spreading or zapping out uncontrolled or from overloading and exploding, and unleash that energy as powerful blasts. This means by standing in a blazing inferno, the character can unleash blasts of fire. By tapping into a generator or grabbing live electrical wires, he can fire electrical blasts. By taking a mega powerful laser blast, he can in turn fire, in this case one, a laser blast back, and so on. If it's hard to follow me when I quote these, know that it is because the grammar is extremely horrible. But to sum up, what this means is you can stand in the middle of an energy source, absorb it into your body, and shoot out that kind of energy. Conceptually, this is cool, and it wasn't in the original power, so that's 1 point for Sambita. However, the implementation here is pure laser garbage, because this was obviously written by someone who does not take care with their verbiage, which is not a habit you want to get into around Palladium fans, right? We're like sharks. Like, it's not quite at a Pathfinder level, where you will maybe literally be eaten alive if you are a designer who uses words carelessly, but the Palladium forums are full of people trying to parse these sentences in a doomed attempt to save them. For example, the super being can momentarily absorb massive amounts of energy. What does momentarily mean here? Does it mean that you can, in an instant, absorb energy and shoot it out as a blast? Or does it mean you can stand up to the energy for a moment so that you can create a blast? In other words, is this something that just happens quickly, or is it limited to a moment? Because if it's limited to a moment, maybe think twice before you step into that blazing inferno. Similarly, quote, massive amounts of energy, the equivalent of something that would inflict 80 points of damage or more. Does it have to be that much energy for me to shoot a blast with it? If it's less than that, can I still absorb the energy but just not shoot a laser? Or if I step into a fire that does 60 points of damage because I misjudged how hot it was, do I take 60 points of damage but still can't shoot a fire blast? These are things I really need to know before I step into a fire. You're asking for a big commitment from me. If I'm going to step into a blazing inferno, I really need to know the details of this bargain. Speaking of this bargain, there's an additional cost, in addition to the kind of trust fall of just like backing up into this fire and having faith that it's going to turn into energy blasts, not horrible burns. This cost is detailed under the dire heading of, quote, deadly limitation. Every melee round that the super being absorbs and channels this powerful and deadly energy, he suffers 2d6 points of damage direct to hit points. Thus, if he taps this energy for too long a period, he could die. Whether this is instead of or in addition to the damage I would normally take from this energy source, I really don't know. There's no indication here of whether, for example, if I get hit with a laser. I know I can now shoot a laser, but did I take damage from the original laser? I don't know. What I do know is I take an average of 7 hit points of damage for absorbing the laser energy and turning it into a laser blast. However, the laser blast just does the same damage as the normal energy I can shoot, so I'm not really gaining anything from this, unless I'm up against someone who has a special vulnerability to some energy type, like lasers, or sonic, or fire, and I have a source of that energy right nearby. But instead of just turning it on them directly, I decide to, at great peril to my own body, leap into this damaging source of energy that's right at hand, and then turn it into a blast that I can shoot at the bad guy. Also, note the rate that I take this HP damage. It's 2d6 per round. Most sources of these energy types, like a Blazing Inferno, sure, that'll burn me for a whole round. One more good reason not to walk into it like a chump. But if I get hit by a laser blast, a sonic attack, an electrical discharge, that's like an instant thing. It doesn't apply for one round. So the rate of time where I take damage is weird too. Let's say that I get hit by one big laser that does 75 points of damage. We're immediately confronted with a bevy of questions that I have no answers to. Do I need to be ready to absorb it, to not take damage? Can I absorb it, given that it does less than 80 damage? If I do absorb it, do I in fact take the 75 damage? Since it happens instantly and not over a full round, do I take the 2d6 hit points of damage? Very basic questions I need to know whether I just got killed by a laser, and whether I can, in turn, pass on this chain letter of death and kill another person with a laser. I have answers to none of these questions. None of this has anything to do with Aaron Oliver. It is all Kevin Sambita. Or Jonathan Breese, who, by the way, also has a credit on this byline. So on count two, absorb, channel, and fire any type of energy, I submit to you that this could not possibly be Aaron Oliver's fault. It is a conceptually interesting, but fundamentally broken and badly written addition to his power. So I think Aaron Oliver is off the hook on this one. Subpower three, aura effect. This is where, instead of shooting a bolt of energy, you do a, quote, spherical flash of energy. It hits everybody within 10 feet of you. This is more or less as Aaron Oliver wrote it, except that a chance to blind opponents was added, which is kind of cool, makes this a distinct tactical option, and the duration, though, is extended to, quote, a few seconds, counts as two melee actions. This is not so cool, because extending this power to have a long duration creates an awkward interaction between the two actions it takes to trigger it and the amount of time it lasts. It seems like it takes two actions and it lasts those two actions, which raises the question of whether you can just use it for one action if you so choose, and the question of if you choose to limit the duration to one action, which is your right per the duration rules, what are you doing for that second action? And also, the range of this power is listed as 10 feet, but the text says that you hit everything around you within 10 feet, so I think where they say range, they meant radius, and it has to be centered on you, but that's not what the rules actually say. So the rewrite fucked this power as well. You can see a trend beginning to emerge. From there on out, this power is pretty much as Aaron Oliver wrote it. There's a ricochet blast effect, which is kind of cool, works well, some resistances to various energy types, and the ability to make your body glow in case you need to, like, read in bed or whatever. All three places that this basically elegant and interesting power was changed, it got worse, longer, and harder to understand. So I think it is very clear that the fault in these powers mostly lies with the rewrites, not with Aaron Oliver's original drafts. Once again, I leave it to you, the jury, to decide, but get ready for these closing statements, because I'm going to blow your mind. There is no greater indictment of Kevin Sambita's meddling with Aaron Oliver's work than the very fact that Super Energy Explosion is here at all. This power is a minimal contribution to this game. We already had powers to shoot lasers, right? We already had an energy explosion power that creates an aura of energy around you that hurts people. It could easily have been reskinned from electricity to fire or whatever. The ability to absorb and channel energy is kind of interesting, but doesn't work at all, and is an original addition to this power anyway. It's not even in Aaron Oliver's original. This power just doesn't give much to the game. Yet, Kevin Sambita selected it to put in his book, while passing up the following other Aaron Oliver powers from Rifter Number 1. Get ready to shake your damn head, as they say on Twitter, because this is what we're not getting to make room for Super Energy Explosion. Alter Physical Structure Putty. This is like Clayface powers. Animate Drawings. divine healing. Liquefaction, the ability to turn objects and people into goop. Self-explosion, which has a number of subpowers, despite its seemingly elegant concept. The first of those subpowers has my favorite name of any Heroes Unlimited subpower, quote, explode whole body. And if missing out on liquefaction and self-explosion was not enough, we also missed out on super consumption, the power to eat fucking solid objects like Matter Eater Lad from the Legion of Superheroes. And it was a fully thought out power that realized that to do that, you'd have to have a super tongue, and therefore it gives you a super tongue. There's a full description of the super tongue, which includes the following text, quote, the tongue is strong enough to support the character's full weight above the ground for as many melees as he has physical endurance points, which presumably is meant to indicate that you can, for example, do a chin-up with your tongue, or like hang from the ceiling if you're in stealth mode by hanging from your tongue. But I prefer to think that when it says it's strong enough to support your full weight above the ground, it means that you like flip over and stand on your tongue and like balance in the air as like a circus trick. Either reading is permissible. The text supports me in this. So, I mean, again, no doubt, Super Energy Explosion was fucked up by Kevin Sambita's interference. More importantly, though, just choosing Super Energy Explosion and not giving us Clayface powers, the ability to bring our drawings to life. Did you know there's an illustration in the Rifter number 1 of a superhero who's animating his own drawings, who's got a fucking pen pouch on his 1990s belt of pouches? That's amazing! A superhero with a pouch that actually does something, that holds a pen so he can draw monsters and bring them to life? That's incredible. We're missing out on a much-needed healing power for this game. We're missing out on being a superhero who turns people into fucking slime. And we're missing out on the ability to do a tongue stand. To make room for what? Extra laser powers? To supplement the existing laser powers? The dumbest thing on this page is that this power is here at all. And I worry, honestly, that because I have to say names in this episode, right? I have to talk about Aaron Oliver and Kevin Sambita because we're talking about two different contributions. I can't just generically say the author. That worries me because I try not to be too hard on people individually in the podcast. As much as it may seem like I'm dumping on Kevin Sambita, when I really get into like complaining in a mean way about this book, I try to like leave the names off it because I know it's a whole process. There's an author, there's an editor, theoretically. There are production constraints. So the author is like an abstract. I worry that in this episode, I am being too hard on Kevin Sambita, who, it goes without saying, has provided me and by extension you with a tremendous amount of joy in your lives. But I think it's a fair criticism to say that there was only so much space in this book, and there was a tremendous amount of support and interest in this game from the outside. You know, there were a lot of people, fans, willing and able to contribute to Heroes Unlimited, including somebody like Aaron Oliver, who was producing some good shit. I mean, despite the fact that Oliver was like a teenager, he was turning out stuff that compares very favorably to the canonical material. And the dumbest thing on this page is that, you know, as much as it seems mean to say it, I think that Kevin Sambita was personally kind of a bottleneck on quality for this game. I think fans were coming up with things that would have been great additions to this game and made it into the Rifter, but Kevin Sambita's work on those powers, both in selecting which ones to use for this game and in rewriting the ones he did use, made them worse. It seems like a harsh criticism, but this is one example of a page of Heroes Unlimited that is worse because it had to pass through Kevin Sambita's hands. And I guess that's just like a symptom of his peculiar genius or whatever you want to call it. Kevin Sambita fundamentally is about ideas and energy. That's what he brings to the table. And execution does not seem to be his strong suit. When somebody else is bringing the ideas and the energy, he basically is a limiting factor on how good it can be when it gets to the page, which is really a shame because I want to play a superhero who can't explode whole body. Anyway, all the evidence is in your hands now. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you must decide whether Aaron Oliver or Kevin Sambita, or both, or neither, are to blame for the state of Aaron Oliver's powers in Heroes Unlimited. With the end of this episode, I leave this question to rest. I will comment no further, even as it gets pretty damn difficult tomorrow when we talk about another Oliver and Sambita power that will drive your campaign off the pier and into the depths of the fucking sea on MDC, the Mega Dumbcast. This has been Mega Dumbcast. New episodes drop every day except for Sundays, when all the previous week's episodes drop in one big chunk for your binging convenience. Contact or check out the show wherever you want. It is Mega Dumbcast on Twitter, Instagram, Podbean, your favorite podcatcher, etc., etc. And if you like my tiny little podcast, consider giving me a tiny bit of money at ko-fi.com/megadumb. That is ko-fi.com/megadumb. MDC, Palladium Books, Heroes Unlimited, and all associated trademarks are property of Kevin Sambita. This season's theme song is To the Top by Midair Machine, whose work you can find at freemusicarchive.org/music/askagain. That's ask again, two words with a space in between. Dumbheads, I will catch you next time.